Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
This concrete spillway had been eroded to the point where there was a large hole that had developed in it, apparently. And
based on one of the articles that I read, it was 200 feet wide, 30 feet deep.
So they were worried that that rushing a bunch more water down this spillway was going to worsen the erosion and cause more problems. They're already looking at a $200 million repair bill, apparently, for this thing. You factor in that, plus there was a lot of rain. So the drought, not a problem right now in California. They've been getting a bunch of wet weather. And so this lake that the dam is up on there, their Oroville Lake, had risen to the point where they needed to eject quite a bit of water from it. And so they tried slowing down the water that was coming out from the main spillway, and that resulted in the backup spillway or the emergency spillway being used for the first time in the dam's history. So because they couldn't rush enough water out quickly enough to bring the level of this lake down as far as they wanted to, it started to spill over the other spillway, which is like a 1,700-foot long, just an earthen thing that, you know, sort of like the lip of a bowl, I think is how you described it, Benjamin. Go ahead.
Yeah. So you have the dam, and that's 920 feet tall or whatever. At the 900-feet mark, so if you think of like a bowl, and then you think like below the edge of the bowl, there's like an indent. Yeah, they're like, oh, we'll just let water go out just normally, and it will, so it won't go over the top of the dam, which
right.
would be
a better example. I think would be most people realize in their sinks, at least in the bathroom sink, there's that hole to help prevent the sink from overflowing.
Yeah, kind of
so
like that.
So it's kind of like that.
Except 1,700 feet wide.
It's more like that, yeah. Yeah.
You were caught up in that last night, Benjamin, when you called us to update us on the situation. It was bumper-to-bumper traffic as you were trying to get out. What's the latest?
Okay, so the latest right now is that where yesterday they were like, it could fail within an hour.
Right.
It's like that was what they were thinking. That's why they ordered the evacuation. Right now, there's no imminent threat, but they haven't called back the evacuation. Although this is interesting, I'm updating you. We just came back from Marysville and Yuba City, my girlfriend Rachel and I, and because we went back because the bridges going in were empty and or open, and so we're like, let's just go see if we can go back in and maybe get a few more things from our house. And so we went, and it's like practically a ghost town. There are still some people there, but it's dead. And then we went and it's like no businesses in Marysville seemed open. Then we went over the bridge into Yuba City, and I would say 90% of the businesses are closed. But we went to a McDonald's and grabbed a bite to eat. And we went to the Target, and they had a skeleton crew there of people. Their cash checker, their cashier, he was from Sacramento because we asked him, like, where are you from? And he's like, I came up from Sacramento because so they're apparently pulling people up to just get stuff out to whoever needs it.
Daryl, you actually have a story about this because we touched on last night. You had said, you know, if the government had never built this dam in the first place, then none of these problems would have happened.
Correct.
And
that applies to any dam or any levee. Because what happens, and I'll explain it again, because, you know, chances are people listening now might not have been listening last night. You wind up, you know, all right, we're going to destroy all of this land to make all of this stuff uninhabitable by building a dam here and building this big, huge, giant lake without ever thinking what happens if the dam that we're building winds up failing and then all of the land downstream that we're making habitable now becomes, you know, part of this area that would wind up being destroyed. So, you know, some government
is that the reason why dams are built, though, is to make, you know, habitable land? Or aren't there other reasons for it, like that they need some sort of water basin or some? I mean, I'm not an environmental expert.
I think they're
or
usually built to keep water out.
Right. So depending
at least that's
on
my
the location, There could be one or more reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's we want to, you know, store up this water to use it as a reservoir. We want to store this water and have turbines up under and use it for hydroelectric.
Apparently, there was a warning given to the environmental bureaucrats on this.
There was more than one warning. More than a decade ago, federal and state officials and some of California's largest water agencies rejected concerns that the massive earthen spillway at Oroville Dam, at risk of collapse as of the writing of this article, could erode during heavy winter rains and cause a catastrophe. Three environmental groups, the Friends of the River, the Sierra Club, and the South Yuba Citizens League, filed a motion with the federal government on October 17, 2005, as part of Oroville Dam's relicensing process, urging federal officials to require that the dam's emergency spillway be armored with concrete rather than remain as an earthen hillside.
Yeah.
The groups filed the motion with FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, abbreviated FERC throughout the article. They said that the dam, built and owned by the state of California, finished in 1968, did not meet modern safety standards because in the event of extreme rain and flooding, fast-rising water would overwhelm the main concrete spillway, then flow down the emergency spillway that could cause heavy erosion that would create flooding for communities downstream.
Because that's what water does. People who actually care about the environment.
Yes.
Who, you know, have an interest just because they actually care, as opposed to the bureaucrats who just, you know, are bureaucrats and maybe some of them care, but ultimately they don't have the right incentives.
Right. So not only do these people care about the environment, but they also, you know, live in the area. So if this thing winds up failing, they get affected.
Well, I don't know that the fact that somebody cares about the environment gives them credibility when talking about how we should build infrastructure, because then they might make bad decisions because of that.
Right. But when they're telling you, hey, this big blob of dirt that you have might wind up falling apart at some point, and that's going to
be
detrimental to the environment, the people that make the decisions to put the big blob of dirt there are going to say, we didn't make any mistakes when we put a big blob of dirt.
Right, and people need to, first of all, quit making dams out of dirt, because that's stupid.
You said you wanted to share more from this story.
Yeah, so after they filed this, John Underdock, a civil engineer with FERC, FERC being the federal...
Is this after they got rejected by FERC, the federal regulators?
No, this is after they filed.
After they filed, okay, because I know you told us they'd rejected it at some point.
Right, well, it said that the thing was rejected, but the senior civil engineer for the San Francisco office of FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, in July 2006 wrote a memo to his managers that says, it is important to recognize that during a rare event with the emergency spillway flowing at its design capacity, spillway operations would not affect reservoir control or endanger the dam. The emergency spillway meets FERC engineering guidelines for an emergency spillway. The guidelines specify that during a rare flood event, it is acceptable for the emergency spillway to sustain significant damage.
I live next to Lake Isabella, which is located about 55 miles east of Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're discussing on your show why they build these dams up here. The main cause, we actually have two dams here. There's the main dam and there's an auxiliary dam. And the auxiliary dam is the most dangerous dam in the United States, the one we have here.
Really?
It's been declared the most dangerous dam. It is administered by the Army Corps of Engineers, which I think is the one up there, too. The reason that this dam was built was to mainly... because Bakersfield was being flooded on a regular basis by the Kern River, so it was for flood control. And secondly, it's for the water is owned by, I mean, our water bills cost hundreds of dollars a month up here. We live around the lake here. We don't even have access to the water. we have to drill wells around, you know, like pay our water company here. All the water is owned by Bakersfield and that Central Valley down there.
Huh.
And the water goes down there and it's initially used for fracking. They mixed it in with fracking fluids in the oil fields, and then it's recovered, and they supposedly clean it up, and then they spray it on crops and irrigate orchards down there.
Huh.
So if you're, you know, you live in New Hampshire, if you're buying produce or anything like that, they're, you know, it's probably, if it came from California, it likely was irrigated with fracking water.
I had an interesting experience. As you know, I was in Colorado for a couple months, and on my way to Colorado, on the plane, getting on one of the planes in Washington, D.C., a connecting flight, I was talking to somebody in front of me, and the person behind me said, "Hey, you're Ridley."
Awesome.
I guess they were just an Oklahoma resident who was watching a lot of the videos and knew what was going on, and he said he was a federal contractor, but he really liked the videos, and said, "Oh, that's nice. The message is getting out." And anyway, so later on, as you know, I had an issue where I was kicked out of a library for trying to film a political event there.
Right.
Went back a few days later to demonstrate against the library, and someone walked up to me and said, "You're Ridley." This is in Colorado Springs, and,
right?
And so they knew again all what was going on near Keene, New Hampshire, right? And of course, I don't live in Keene, but at least they got the state right.
You have lived in Keene on more than one occasion. I mean, you kind of move around. Yeah.
And then...
And FreeKeene.com is one of your longest-running advertisers, so it could be understandable why someone would confuse you with possibly living here, given that you're frequently saying on your show, on your YouTube channel, FreeKeene.com.
I'm sure you probably remember very briefly when Ridley was doing 5-minute Ridley reports for the LRN stream.
Yeah, that's right. He had a Ridley Report podcast.
Yeah.
Ridley News or something. I forget what it was called. Ridley Report Audio News.
If libraries are harassing him, I'm going to have to change my go-to example for just a mundane government agency. Maybe there aren't any more, because that's usually my go-to of like, well, you know, maybe you shouldn't be a government agent, but it doesn't necessarily violate the NAP to be a librarian. That's like the example I always use.
The NAP is a non-aggression principle. Now,
apparently, if they're...
You haven't seen the video then, I take it?
No.
Oh, it's pretty outrageous. It actually wasn't the librarians that were messing with him. It was the security staff. So apparently at this library, they actually have in Boulder or wherever it was, they actually have...
I think it's Colorado Springs.
Whichever.
Unless the event brought it with them.
No, I think they were there normally. They had like a little security desk area where they were working. So they actually have security guards at this library, and they were behaving just like, you know, you would expect cops to behave, even though they were private security. Just like a teenager trying to acquire alcohol, the person who's been banned from acquiring alcohol is also going to jump through whatever hoops they need to jump through. And even if their friends won't help them out, they can still just hang out outside of the liquor store and just wait for somebody to show up where they can, you know, give them a few bucks and then have them buy it for them. But I do have the story, and thanks for the call, Sarah. So let's talk about this. KRQE reporting that a New Mexico lawmaker, so this hasn't passed yet, this is a proposal, has an idea to curb drinking and driving, and that is sure to have people talking. She wants to give convicted drunk drivers special licenses that keep them from buying alcohol, some of them for life. Some people believe stiffer penalties could be the deterrent that saves a life. Connie Moore says you only have to have one accident where you run over a child or crash into something. Others that we spoke with said they don't think the law would make a difference. Ryan Hanahar said you could still have access to alcohol, have anyone buy it for you. Well, I suspect that this bill will also address that in the same way that it's illegal to buy for someone under the age of 21.
Right, but it's
not
possible. Like, it would be
no, but it would
even
be illegal.
In New Hampshire, it's illegal to purchase alcohol for someone else.
Yeah, I guess I see what you're saying there.
The liquor
the way
laws
it's written.
Are technically written to where you cannot distribute alcohol,
right. You
and that
give
means
it away.
I can't hand you a beer,
right.
Unless I have a liquor license. And since you are prohibited from going to any of the liquor stores in New Hampshire, the only way you can obtain liquor is for someone to wind up committing either a misdemeanor
felony.
Or a felony.
That's right.
I'm not defending drunk driving at all, but why are there all these kids like standing in the middle of the road at 2 o'clock in the morning when they're going to be hit by drunk drivers? Like, why is that? Why are they there? Because they're always like, you're going to hit a kid. Okay?
Well, drunk drivers drive all the time. I mean, it's not just after dark when drunk drivers are on the roads. Right,
I mean, but most people aren't drunk at noon on Wednesday.
Most people aren't drunk, you know, hopefully at midnight either, but there are still drunk people on the roads,
right,
anytime.
The number of drunk people on the roads at
it
midnight and 2 o'clock in the morning is higher than at 10 a.m.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners. If you're like me, then you really enjoy Free Talk Live and the message of liberty. Yet you also may not have a lot of time to listen to an entire episode of Free Talk Live, so you listen to the Digest instead. If you enjoy the Digest, please donate $5 to $10 per month via Patreon, or send some Bitcoin or Ether instead. See the show description for details on how to do so.
I'm very excited about being here. It's been really fun so far. I'm able to hang out with so many cool libertarians. And I wanted to announce a festival and invite all of the listeners to Free Talk Live to this year's Somalia Fest.
Really?
In northern New Hampshire.
Now, this year, so it happened last year, didn't it?
Yeah, so we started Somalia Fest last year as a trial within Pork Fest. And
Pork Fest,
know,
for those that don't know, is the Free State Project, which is one of the Liberty migrations to New Hampshire. They put on this yearly festival, the Porcupine Freedom Festival. Last year, there was some drama surrounding it, given that they banned me from their festival and also, therefore, banned Free Talk Live from broadcasting from the festival. So I don't know if Somalia Fest came out of all that, but I felt like, to some extent, that was part of the influence.
Yeah, definitely. Somalia Fest came out of that, and Pork Fest is awesome. Don't get me wrong. I love it. I love the people there, but it's taking a particular direction to attract a certain type of person.
What kind of person would you say?
Well, a more conservative type of person who doesn't focus on certain issues of civil liberties and freedom, and specifically people who like want to have families and be conservative and move and buy houses, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I don't see anything wrong with that. Just don't do it at an acid fest in a strip tent.
Well, Somalia Fest is completely unofficial. It is June 16th through June 20th, to the weekend before Pork Fest. And it's at Rogers Campground.
So last year it coincided with the Porcupine Freedom Festival. It was like a little portion of it. You had the Somalia Fest participants sort of buying campsites together, as I understood it, right?
It was more of a kind of spiritual thing at Pork Fest. You know, people were, I don't know, they were doing the Somalia Fest thing and pretending to be outside of the Free State Project organization. But anyway, this time it's Somalia Fest the weekend before, so you can do a whole week still at Rogers. But also on Saturday is the Pirate Party Convention and Disco.
No way! The Pirate Party from the UK, or the, not the UK, but from Europe.
Well, the Pirate Party is a bunch of different parties, but they are all based around libertarian political organization. It's been sweeping Europe. They have membership in the European Parliament. And generally, the pirate parties support civil rights, direct democracy and participation in government, and reform of copyright and patent laws. They're in favor of free sharing of knowledge, information, privacy, and freedom of information, that kind of thing.
We want Somalia Fest 52 weeks out of the year, not just 1 week out of the year. We want thousands of liberty-minded people to be here in New Hampshire living nearby one another, helping one another with their various different projects, different activist projects. For instance, Daryl, you and I tomorrow, and I think maybe Heather, are going to be heading out to the State House for week number 6 of Liberty Lobby.
Yep.
Which, you are the Liberty Lobbyist. We're just kind of tagging along for fun. And, you know, speaking, we're not, me and Heather are not lobbyists in that we're not paid to speak to these bureaucrats and politicians, but we'll be there. We'll be testifying on various different pieces of legislation because we believe that it makes a difference, that there are some legislators who have not made up their mind or at least open-minded enough to consider other ideas. Connecting with these folks is pretty easy to do. And over time, when you're there often enough and you start going to some of these Liberty events, you see that a lot of these guys are showing up and you'll start to get to talk to them. So if you attend the social events that happen here in New Hampshire, a lot of times you're going to be at an event and there might be a handful of state representatives there just milling about and talking to folks. So as an example of sort of the moving those relationships forward and how they end up working out in the favor of more freedom in the state house. There was a bill last week, and I put up the video from over at freekeen.com. You can see six videos from our hearings that some of us went to last week that I recorded. And one of them was a proposal to remove the 24% what they call penalty assessment. Now, Melanie, you are trained as an attorney, so I'm sure you'll appreciate this. The penalty assessment here.
The 420 fee?
Yeah, well, you can call it that. The reason you're calling it that is because it used to be 20%. It's now 24%. And the fine on criminal charges receives this penalty assessment. So back when it was 20%, the fine for cannabis possession typically was $350. Add to that the 20% penalty assessment, and it came out to a total of $420. So it was like, ha, ha, ha. You know, anytime somebody got convicted of marijuana, $420 was what they had to pay. We only really get the hardcore, the best activists. And we don't want just anybody to move to New Hampshire. We want libertarians.
That's the positive thing about having horrible weather is that the subpar people kind of, you don't have them.
That's right.
I don't know. Massachusetts also gets really bad cold weather.
That's true.
And there's a lot of, you know,
there's a lot of statism
that live there.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and big government Republicans.
But even among statists, are they like hardworking, have jobs? Like, not that being a statist is okay, but even among statists, I think they're probably the higher quality of statists.
I don't know if you've spent much time in Massachusetts.
No, not really.
There are parts of Massachusetts that have horrible meth problems and heroin problems.
I chased my ex-wife around for a couple of years. She was an LDS. That'll upset Melanie. But anyway,
Church of Latter-day Saints.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
And so she took her to Utah. So, but I decided, well, I'll move in next door to you then. Fine. So I go out there and I'd read the police blotter every day, and the police blotter would say so and so got busted for marijuana. And no drug tax stamp. And the next one would say, so-and-so got caught with something, and no drug tax stamp. Mm-hmm. And everyone, there was always a second charge, no drug tax stamp. And I was thinking, so I called them. You know, I'm just a weenie. So I called them. I said, can I buy a drug tax stamp? You know, keep books? And he said, no.
Right. Yeah, that's how they. That's one of the ways they regulated drugs at the federal level, and it sounds like they're doing it in Utah as well, where you can have the drug as long as it has the tax stamp that they don't sell.
I wanted to answer your question about time of day for drunk drivers. One of you had broached that earlier, and then I wanted to get to my most important point relative to a House resolution bill which was introduced last week. Relative to the DUIs, when I retired in 2004, generally speaking, here's how it went. Rush hour was your most deadly time of day for accidents. However, it was the lowest time of day for alcohol-related offenses, which were at 33%. Now, I say that relatively speaking, of course, because 33% is a lot of fatalities, and that's what I'm speaking of.
Just to be clear, the 33% is 33% of crashes or fatalities, or what is the 33%?
Of fatal accidents. And I'm speaking nationwide, and it generally applies to most states.
During rush hour, 33% of fatalities are alcohol-based.
That would be correct.
Okay.
In the 90s, we had the ability to use discretion and not necessarily wreck these kids' lives and put them in jail. We could have them park the car, call mom and dad, and a lot of times that's a lot more effective, having mom and dad come down and get your drunken rear end in the middle of the night. We don't see it too much after that, and your life is still intact. So I'd like to
good
see
for you for doing
back.
That. That's a pleasant thing to hear.
Okay, thank you. Now, here's the most important point of my call.
Okay.
Last week, Representative Congressman Massey from Kentucky introduced a one-sentence bill, and it's in the hopper. It has bipartisan support. It reads like this. The Department of Education shall terminate on December 31st, 2018. Abolish the whole department. I understand it has over 400,000 employees making around six figures each. And
what?
He wants to destroy the entire department. That would be a great inlet to destroying the other illegal and unconstitutional federal agencies like the DEA, which we have.
Well, that's not going to happen.
With.
Donald Trump just said he was going to ramp up the war on drugs. But if this is for real, that's pretty
real.
That is a
bill. That is a bill.
It is for real. And one thing that I think is very interesting is that the Republicans in the 1980s had vowed to do just this because the Department of Education was not created until the term of Jimmy Carter.
Mike Pence, the vice president, apparently has chosen a libertarian, allegedly, an advocate of free markets, as the chief economist for Pence. Calabria, Mark Calabria, apparently was director of financial regulation studies at the Cato Institute, where he was a prominent voice on financial and economic policy and an expert on mortgage and housing reform. This, according to Politico.com. He gives President Trump's White House, quote, a voice around the table that will give them their philosophical true north, unquote, said Jim Parrott, the senior advisor to former President Barack Obama's National Economic Council. Before joining Cato in 2009, Calabria worked for the Senate Banking Committee, where he handled housing, mortgage finance, economics, banking, and insurance for then-ranking member Richard Shelby. His resume includes stints at the Department of Housing and Urban Development and the National Association of Realtors and the National Association of Home Builders. So he's a supposed libertarian being brought on board as the chief economist for the Trump administration.
One good thing about Trump is that he makes the people on the left realize that government isn't always a great thing. And
I don't know that they realize that, though. I don't think they do.
Well, maybe not. Maybe they don't get that point. So then the good thing about Obama was that he woke up more people to the threat of communism than all the John Birchers who ever lived. And I've got a question for you about the – remember the alligator lady with the motorcycle and stuff?
Yeah, the lady from Florida with Rambo, the gator, that she was trying to keep, the state was trying to take from her. Ultimately, they did allow her to keep it with some extra restrictions on how she was able to utilize the gator. She had taken it to photo opportunities at like county fairs and birthday parties, and now she's no longer allowed to do that.
Well, you had this idea of her gator becoming the mascot for that gator thing you were talking about.
I don't remember what gator thing.
Like Gatorland or something.
Host Gator. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. You should see, she needs you to be a matchmaker and link them two up and do it in such a way that somehow Free Talk Live gets a buck every time they do something.
No, I'm not interested in that. But I'm not interested in making money off of that. This controversial radio host, Bob Romanek, who apparently said the N-word recently, and people are saying, you know, what can be done about this, Hung?
I don't know. That word doesn't really bother me too much no more because it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of almost cliche now. So
why call in about it?
Oh, this was the FCC thing. I was just...
You were curious. You're curious to know if anything could be done.
Well, I think people are going to assume that that's going to be on the list of banned words. I mean, if you're going to go around banning words, you would think that would be one of them.
The thing is, I don't know if there actually is a list. That's the thing with the FCC. It's so hard to figure out exactly what is or is not allowed on the air.
No, there are times when you don't want to make a list because then it becomes inclusive of, well, somebody created a new swear word.
I can think of something more horrible to say.
Somebody created a new swear word, and we've not added it to the list, and it's too time-consuming to make it onto the list. So let's just not have a list and go by, I think it was a Supreme Court justice that said, I know it when I see it.
And they do that with morning shows all the time, like a lot of rock morning shows, Bubba the Love Sponge from Tampa or whatever. You could listen to that show, and they would say words in place of classic swear words that were obviously intended to be those swear words. I can't think of any examples because I wasn't a regular listener, but I know that's the kind of stuff that they would do.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.